I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Talking Snooker with Phil Hague and Nick Metcalf. Once again, talking about the game we all love.
We are. It's Sunday night. It feels like it's been a little while since we've done one of these Sunday night records straight after a final. Quite enjoy them. Getting a bit of buzz after the final. Watching Judd Trump pull off some more history. It's been amazing, hasn't it?
It really has, Phil. Hat-trick hero, he was called on the television tonight. And that's exactly what he is. I mean, he's writing the headlines again. I mean, I talk about, you know, putting the tape from last week on. I joked last time we could put the tape from the last 2 weeks on. We can just keep replaying it, Phil. It's the same champion, and he's just on the most marvellous roll. You know, I think I said on social media, it's just a wonderful purple patch. And it's actually a privilege to watch it, in my view. It is kind of inspiring to see it. You know, he felt like he's running on not quite empty at times this week, but certainly not on full cylinders. But he's just so determined. We're really seeing that determined side of Judd coming out. And yes, he is the Northern Ireland Open champion again. So many stats tonight. We could just do the whole thing on that, frankly. It's a fourth Northern Ireland for him. That's big in its own right. Four of these. Haven't been that many. And I think I saw a message that he's won a fifth of all the home nations. I mean, that's amazing enough. But what we're really focusing on, of course, is a third ranking event in a row. Joining Ray Reardon, Steve Davis, Stephen Hendry and Ding Junhui as players that have done that. And also quite staggering in so many ways, 20 ranking event matches in a row won. The 20th of those, Phil, coming with today's win. This is Sunday night, so we're recording just after the final. He's beaten Chris Wakelin, and pretty comfortably too, 9-3 in the final in Belfast. I mean, thesaurus, Phil. We need a whole, you know, a whole load of them. It's just what he's doing in snooker is quite amazing. It's just one of the best months, with the best month he's ever had, and just clearly in terms of just win after win. And you almost can't believe what he's doing. It's just wonderful stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's weird because obviously we saw him do this kind of thing in 2019, 2020 when he was winning all those tournaments. So in a way, you know, it's not so startling having seen him do similar before. But it has, in a way, come out of nowhere after two pretty quiet seasons. And yeah, watching it tonight, I was thinking back to the World Championships only 6 months ago when he lost in the first round to Anthony McGill. And when he got that draw, which is, you know, that's the draw that no one wanted at the Crucible as the seed. But he was sort of fancied to lose and then did lose. And he was speaking quite sort of bleakly afterwards, saying, yeah, I'd missed loads of easy balls. I wouldn't have beaten anyone any good playing like that, so I deserved to lose. He was really downbeat. And it was hard to know what kind of season we were going to expect from him, really. Then he got to that final at the European Masters, so I thought, oh, that's quite encouraging. But then after that, it was a bit down. There was a quarterfinal in Shanghai against Selby, which looked like that was going to be great, and he really sort of quite tamely lost that. Then he went out early at the British to Ahmad Mir, so then it was again like, oh, what's going to happen? And then it's been since then, this. So, yeah, I mean, it's been amazing, really. And it's amazing how things can turn around so quickly. These guys, you know, we were never writing off Judd Trump, but you should be very careful, anyone who was considering doing that, because the talent's there and it can spring out again out of seemingly nowhere.
I love your use of this. Yeah, that's all you need. Before, you know, all that, and now it's this referring to a quite amazing run of form. We've seen 3 ranking event wins in a row. The latest coming then in Belfast. Now, good news, Phil, I'm not going to do that table of 10 players again because I do it every time, but I've got 5. And the reason I'm doing that is he's gone fifth ever. Ronnie O'Sullivan, 39. Stephen Hendry, 36. John Higgins, 31. Steve Davis, 28. Now Judd Trump, 26. Phil, do you remember when we were much younger men and we were talking about Judd being a couple behind Mark Williams, and can you believe the Welshman's now 2 ahead of him? No, it's only about four weeks ago, wasn't it, basically? Probably 3 weeks ago, in fact, because we kind of missed a week in between the two. But I think it's let's put it this way. We're in October. It was in October that we were saying that pretty much. And he's just, what he's done is something else. And yeah, breathing down Steve Davis's neck now, Philly, you know, he'll obviously go past Steve at some stage. John Higgins in his sights as well. So he's putting the numbers on the board in quite some way. I mean, let's talk about the final then. I mean, he was 2-1 down, and my attention was a little bit diverted by the big afternoon of football, but I certainly had, you know, one eye kept on the snooker, and he just sort of motored from there, didn't he? Got the frame to go 2-2, which Wakeling could have won, actually. That was important. That could have been 3-1 Wakeling. It went 2-2. And then edging a seventh frame was really important for Judd, actually, with a 63 and taking a 6-2 lead. I think, frankly, Wakeling had to be 4-4 or worse, 5-3. At 6-2, some finals don't seem over, but when they're 1st to 9 and the player starting is obviously such a big favourite already, you kind of thought that would be the way. And tonight, well, we're speaking just after the conclusion, we only saw an hour of play. And Judd was just sparkling. He had breaks of 101, 125, and 129. Wakeling, very sporting guys, we know anyway. Applauding in his chair, Phil. I mean, for him, it's a great achievement, which we should talk about as well, of course, and I'm sure we will do shortly. So for Wakeling, he was using words like magic. For him to get to a big final like this, really building on that shootout success, is big. But everyone, you know, Wakeling, his opponent today, all of us watching, were just kind of lost in admiration for what Trump's doing. And he's saying tonight to Rachel Casey on Eurosport, he literally doesn't know what to say. He's doing so many of these speeches, Phil, and he's not being arrogant with it. He's just saying, what do I keep saying? I keep winning them. You know, he talks about it being a dream, and that's kind of what it must feel like. He just, total crest of a wave stuff. And yeah, he just made more history. But say, specifically in this venue, sometimes you hear players, they play a little bit lip service, weren't they? Oh, I love this place. I love this arena. Sometimes you think it's a bit of an autopilot comment. But with Judd in this place, you know he means it. Because look, it is obviously a great place with a great atmosphere. But of course he loves it. Those 3 wins in a row, now a 4th, he just comes alive in that place, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I've not been, but it gets rave reviews, doesn't it? All the players. Chris Wakeling was saying that in his runner-up speech as well. And it looks great. People talk about sort of, when they show the crowd, you see the tears, and it's just a very cool setup. And the crowd are very supportive there, vocal in the right way. And yeah, the players love playing there, and clearly Judd loves playing there. He's played, I think he's only played in that sort of 7 times. He's won 4 of them. So it's remarkable stuff. And I think, I mean, really, he didn't play that well in that first session, did he? And actually, Chris could have been 4-0 up. Because, like you said, he could have won that 4th frame, and he could have won the first as well. He had a chance there. And, you know, that obviously would have been a completely different setup there going forward. But it was level at 2-2, and probably Chris was playing the better stuff there. But, yeah, it all changed from there on in. And, yeah, not to be critical of Wakeley, really. Trump just played really, really well. You, like you said, that seventh frame to go 5-2, because Wakeley made a half century and then Judd made 60-odd to take it. And then from there on in, got the breaks here. 96, 101, 125. 52, 129 to win it. It's no one's going to do much about that, are they? So yeah, it was brilliant stuff. And he didn't. He has won games in this run. He's won comfortably. He's won quite a few from behind or looking sticky. So he's not really shown signs of any sort of fatigue or anything like that, because he's won in all different kind of ways. There's not been certain situations that put too much pressure on him. I think it is fair to say, and people have mentioned sort of, he's had not the hardest run through these three tournaments. So I think that is fair. I mean, he still plays some great players. I think he's played Hawkins twice over these three tournaments, beat Higgins in the semi-final, played Maguire this tournament. I can't remember who else he played over the other two, but, you know, they're all tricky players on the tour. But he hasn't had too many real, real big hitters. But that's not to take anything away from him to win three tournaments on the spin, 20 straight matches. Over short formats, you know, these best of sevens are supposed to be banana skins, aren't they? But like when he was at his real peak, 2019-20, he didn't have a problem with them then. He didn't seem to have a problem with them now.
No, you summed that up so well. And you're right what you said. You couldn't sort of pigeonhole Trump. Oh, he's winning them all easily. I mean, this is hardly a surprise when he wins 20 matches. Of course, you're going to have a mixture. But, you know, he's winning some handsomely and just hardly giving the other guy a shot. He's winning some from quite a lot, as we'll come through this week, actually, from behind, where he's looking sort of really, really up against it. So he's showing his tenacious side. He's testing all parts of his you know, snooker brain, snooker quality. And that's another, you know, reason why it's just been great to watch, actually. Yeah, I've had a couple tonight. I must admit, write to me on social media. Oh, you know, he's not had hard runs here. You know, he won't win the Triple Crown events. Well, listen, I've been one of those that has said over the years, I think Judd should put the very, very biggest ones on the board more often. But even I have to pull rank on, you know, at times. And he did with a Triple Crown just gone. He won the Masters, you know. And he's just winning tournament after tournament. Sometimes you just got to take your hat off. I mean, we know there are different levels of events in the game. Of course, some are bigger than others. But these are good events he's winning. And this Northern Ireland Open, as we said, is, you know, I think is just a top tournament, taking a, well, stolen a march on the English and Welsh, Welsh is probably top still because of its history. But I love this tournament. I think it's cracking, and a lot of the players love it. So there's a real prestige about it, this Northern Ireland Open. So to win it four times is just, you know, absolutely excellent. And, yeah, you just felt Wakeling really did make, he had to do more damage in the afternoon, really, to be 2-6 down. Wasn't really a total reflection, was it, that 6-2, really? As you suggest, he had moments, but I guess that's just the experience of being on the big stage. I think if Wakeling was with us now, he'd say that. Had this been his seventh or eighth final, you got a feeling it would have ended up a bit differently this afternoon. That's just the way it goes. But didn't he do well, to use an old phrase from television, from television, Phil? You know, to... I'm not suggesting that we thought it would come this soon in October, frankly, to reach such a big final. Well, I think we both definitely strongly hinted, certainly when he joined us, you know, on here in recent times, that we did think that he would build on that shootout success. He's got all the makings of someone that's had an okay career so far by you know, any stretch. Had decent runs, beat good players throughout his career, but never really taken that next step. But he looks like he has the ingredients of a guy that can. Very good snooker player, first and foremost, but also that confidence now. And this will be, you know, big thing for him. And he's a very likable guy, isn't he, Wakeling, actually? Just tonight on television, I'll talk about the sporting thing with the clapping, but, you know, really giving credit, saying it's a dream to play Judd. Nice line about Judd paying off his mortgage just on wins over him. Bit of self-deprecation there, struggles to get a better than Trump, of course, but saying just what a special, you know, a day and night it was for him, and you really got that feeling he'll build on this. So a nice sort of story all round, and Trump was very gracious to Wakeling, saying that he thinks, you know, he's really got his improvements have been massive over the last year. So So really enjoyable all round. You know, not the close finals we've had in Belfast over the years, but, you know, you can't be greedy. You can't get them all the time, can you? And, you know, much as we love every final to be nip and tuck till 10, 11 o'clock, sometimes they're open over 8 o'clock, Phil, and we're recording the podcast early.
Yeah, and I think an early not close final is all right if the one guy's played so well. You know, it wasn't one crumble or anything. It was just a masterclass from Judd. So, yeah, you can't really have any arguments to that. But, yeah, on Chris, yeah, I agree that he speaks really well. He spoke really well at the end of the match there. And in all his interviews, I heard from him this week. And he did when he was on here. If anyone missed that episode, definitely go back and have a listen. I really enjoyed having him on here. And I think he said it on here as well. He definitely said it when I spoke to him for Metro, that he was... His aim, or one of his aims this season, was trying to get into the Masters this season. So by top 16 by January, oh, actually not even January, it's by the UK Championship, isn't it? Because that's when they do the draw.
Yeah.
Which seemed, you know, I loved the big goal, but it seemed very ambitious. But this has taken him up to 21. I guess it seemed very ambitious because he had to do quite a lot of stuff that he'd never done before. But straight away, he's ticked off a box that he'd never done before. Been to... a final beyond outside of the shootout. So yeah, he's showing that he's capable of doing these things that he's aiming at. And he still is left to get quite a few wins to get into that Masters, but it's not out of the question at all. And he's certainly a player on the rise, definitely trending in the right direction, as Sean Murphy might say. I mean, mentioned Murphy, that was when he showed he was really meaning business this week, I think. He actually beat Martin O'Donnell in the previous round, who's been playing quite well recently, so that was sort of a suggestion that he might be up to something. And win over Murphy, beat that comfortable win over Lasowski in the semis. So yeah, just a top week for him. And it looked like he was not too downbeat. Obviously, he preferred to win the final, that goes without saying, but he looked in a good enough mood. His best ever run in a longer format tournament, decent bit of cash, rise up the rankings. It's not too bad, is it?
Not too bad at all. Not too shabby. And well, yeah. I mean, how do you said a year ago? You think Chris Wakeley might play in the Masters? It would be half a crazy thing to say. You never would have thought that in a million years. So even getting so close, if he doesn't make it, shows the absolutely superb progress he's made. And again, we have to say, a few people actually asked me, we'll come to that semi, Lasowski, Wakelin, do I think, or, you know, do people in snooker think that Wakelin almost would have as much confidence as Lasowski, even though Lasowski's had a much stronger career, frankly. Wakelin has got a trophy and a ranking event. And I don't know about that. I think it's quite nuanced, the answer to that. But it does show, doesn't it? Again, I know we're fans of the shootout. I'm not comfortable with the ranking event status, but, you know, it just shows it has that word gravitas, whatever event it is, to be a ranking event winner gives you something going forward, doesn't it? And, you know, obviously, you know, he keeps mentioning as well, as he would, you know, how big that was for him and, you know, took that step up. And we've seen a few, if you went through the shootout winners, I think you can half often tell, actually, even on the night, you know, I think, you know, we've all been around enough to use our snooker judgment. Sometimes it is a bit of a last hurrah for some of them. This might be the biggest one, actually, he ever does. But with Wakelin, you just had a feeling, now that's the start of something. A little bit like when Hossein won the shootout, Similar, I think. And but yeah, I feel I've done quite a lot of waffling there, not said an awful lot, Phil, but what's new?
No, I think you're totally right. And even, obviously, the whole ranking status of the shootout is constantly debated and it gives it more gravitas. But even when it wasn't, because I think that's what happened with Hawkins when he won it in 2012. And that wasn't ranking then. And that was really sort of the boost to him, because then he went and won in Australia. I think they were both 2012. I think Australia was after the shootout. But yeah, ranking or not, it's just the getting to the end of the week and being the person walking away with a trophy.
Yeah.
And yeah, we've definitely seen it. You know, not with everyone. It's not guaranteed by any means, but you've got to take the positives from it and the huge boost to confidence. You know, these guys play in so many tournaments, and if it's the first time you ever walked away as the winner, then it must be an incredible feeling. And Chris has been very open about that. And it's almost a bit of a shame with the shootout, because anyone who has success in it almost feels like they have to say, oh, I know it's the shootout, but, you know, it's still a tournament. They've had to pop the balls to win it under a lot of pressure. And some players say, you know, they're never as nervous in any tournament as the shootout. You know, it's a unique atmosphere, so it takes some winning. There's so many players that are similar-ish in terms of ability. It's only a little boost of confidence here and there that can make a huge amount of difference. And Chris Wakeling's showing that now. So, yeah, he's not someone you want to draw. Anyone would want to draw now. I think the top guys aren't going to be happy to see Chris Wakeling opposite them in any draw. And he's qualified for the International Championship. He won 6-0 in his qualifier for that. More could form. So he'll be going there hoping for another deep run.
He certainly will. Now, let's go back and talk about some of the earliest stories in the week then. And I think, as it's become traditional, probably take you through the results from the last 16 stage. But some of the earliest stories then, and having a look at day one here, a couple of highlights for me. Sam Craigie beating Kyron Wilson 4-3. And a really exciting match. Jimmy White coming so close to toppling Anthony McGill, Phil. McGill winning it 4-3. And then, well, obviously a really big line from day two, which is Andras Petrov beating Mark Allen 4-3, ending Allen's hopes for third Belfast success in a row. Petrov saying, it's the best win of my career by far. I was really lucky in the end. It went to the final black, didn't it, Phil? He says, when I was over the last black, I was thinking, this is for my daughter and I will pot it. And that, Phil, in classic snooker fashion, it was 1:44 in the morning in the UK. But it was 3:44 a.m. if you were in Estonia. In downtown Tallinn, Phil, the clocks were reading 3:44 in the morning. What a sport. And a great win, one of those classic, exciting late-night finishes. And I think he was saying his daughter was up in the night, couldn't sleep. So it must have been one of those sort of sixth sense, even from a toddler, knowing that dad was doing something quite big. Anyway, Aaron Hill beat Fan Sengzi 4-1, another result I picked from that day. A break of 80 in the first frame, then 73 in the last from Hill. And he's really showing good form in recent weeks. So continuing that trend from him. So yeah, some games for you to have a word on there. And of course, please do pick your own highlights there, Phil, as we sort of take a kind of look at the highlights generally, the early stages. I mean, Andras Petrov beating Mark Allen, I mean, that's just a cracking win.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, Andras is a bit of a character. I'm always very active on social media. It's great having players from countries that we don't see on the tour very often. And he's shown his ability in little flashes. You know, it's obviously very hard, and he seems to draw Mark Williams every other match. So it's very difficult for these guys to get wins. But he had that run through UK Championship qualifying. He didn't get to the Barbican bit. I remember him beating Gary Wilson and maybe two other players. But he can do it. And that was a fantastic win against Allen, who... you know, he's not getting the results that he did last season. He got to the quarters in Wuhan, so that was a bit of a showed something. He beat Lasowski there, didn't he, and C. So it's not a million miles away, but it isn't there. I know he was saying when I saw him in Brentwood that he was sort of struggling for ideas because his former coach died over the summer and he's not working with Terry Griffiths anymore. And I think he's linked up with Steve Feeney, actually, from Sightright. So he's trying something new to regain some form. And he needs to, yeah, because it's nothing like he was last season results-wise. But, you know, obviously a very, very good player. I'm sure he'll spring back into action sometime soon. But similar for Kyron Wilson, I'd say his early season results quite troubling, really. Not had too many wins. He started all right in the Championship League. And then it was quarterfinals at the European Masters. But after that, very, very quiet. So yeah, he'll want to get some wins on the board soon. But yeah, outside of the ones you mentioned, there were some of the interesting ones. What was the Sean Murphy Marco Fu? That was that day. Was it 4-3 to Murphy? That was a cracking match, actually. Really enjoyable. Long final frame, got very tense. Looked like Fu was going to win. He was quite far ahead near the end, but Murphy fought back well. And Neil Robertson, another very early exit for Neil, 4-1 to Jordan Brown. Jordan played well in that game in front of his home crowd. But, if I'm talking about people who are worried about their early season form, add Neil Robertson to that list because we spoke about this last time about he's desperate to get back to Australia. Not sure when he's planning to do that, but he needs some sort of reset. I don't know if that's, you know, if he's convinced that's the reason why, then fine. And that, but he needs to turn it off and turn it on again. You know, if it was a computer, he needs something to spring his mind back into gear, because it's just not going well for him at the minute. I feel like we said it a load of times, but this run going back to 2006 of winning a tournament every year looks very unlikely to be extended to 2023, which is a great shame. He's a million miles off it at the minute.
No, he really is. We talked about it last time. I think I liked your summation. Actually, listen to it again. Flicking through my diary now, I thought, yeah, he probably will just miss the Scottish in terms of a long form tournament, and then the shootout, which I think, as you say, he doesn't normally play in anyway. Mm. But looking at the dates, UK finishes December 3rd if he gets to the final. He may, of course, be able to go earlier. And then there's sort of 5-6 weeks until the Masters, actually. So it could work out he doesn't miss that much. But anyway, even to miss anything and go away is a big line. But we'll see. My instincts say he might well come back a different man and have a very strong second half of the season. Seasons are long, aren't they? It's like Mark Allen last season had a brilliant season. Of course he did, and was rightly the player of the season. He got my vote, and I'm pretty sure I remember he got yours as well. Mm. But there were periods he didn't do so much. I think towards the end he won quite a big tournament, actually. But he ran out of steam a bit, and I think you can have a sort of stuttering season where you don't do much and then finish it brilliantly. So, it's always hard to assess, and I think, until the end of the campaign. Yeah. But Neil certainly, hasn't, by his standards, it's just, not miles off the pace.
I actually thought that, what you said there, I thought that with Trump, because I saw a couple of people tweeting, he's got to be the favourite for the world now. And if you literally mean now, like what the odds say now, then sure. But there's an awful lot of balls before Sheffield.
Yeah.
He could not win another tournament. Mark Selby win two or three in the second half of the season, he'd be favourite. So, like you say, there's an awful lot of stuff to play.
Yeah, I mean, the way my mind works, this makes me less inclined to think Trump will win it because he's playing so well now, But, it's a funny old business. And as we know, that tournament is a different ball game to anything else in the sport anyway. Yeah, good way of saying it. Now, day three then, Joe Perry. Now, he's a guy that's been out of form, but he's coming back, isn't it? Beat Michael White 4-3 with a break of 1-4-5. Now, it's a funny thing to suddenly remember, but when Joe was on here and he won that big tournament, didn't he? But before that, he was also out of form. And I think the referee said to him, you're bloody good. He said, well, I can play this game. and I think he's a bit like that now. We shouldn't be that surprised. He's a smashing player, Joe, but it's good to see him back playing well. And also a hell of a game between Anthony McGill and Robbie McGuigan. I didn't really follow this. I remember reading bits about it and thought, it sounded quite unlikely. But just before recording, checked on the results. And McGill was 3-1 down, 62-23 down, with 27 on the table, so the colours left. He got the three snookers he needed and then potted the remaining balls to get a tie, won the respotted black, and then went on to win the match 4-3. I mean, bloody hell, that's quite something. And then on day four, Stan Moody, the best win so far of his career, beating Gary Wilson 4-2. Top victory for the 17-year-old. And I'm interested to say, in what he had to say after, because it doesn't really matter how long your career is, you can still compartmentalize it, which I kind of like. He says, a few months ago, I would have lost this match 4-3 because my head would have gone after missing the chance I had at 3-1. But today I stayed calm. I really like that. Already, he can see already in his burgeoning, very, very short so far pro career, things can change. And I like that aspect and intelligence he's got in himself to sort of see that. Also, battle of the Williams, Robbie Williams with a fine win, beating Mark Williams 4-2. So that's a couple more days of results there, Phil. As I said, of course, do pick your own highlights. But Joe Perry playing well again. What a win for Stan Moody. He's beating Gary Wilson. That's a cracker for him.
Yeah, I think we said when, obviously this tournament with the backdrop of the Macau 5 and Ronnie pulling out, of course, whenever big names aren't there, it's a chance for new people to make their mark. And it was great to see Stan, who's obviously had an awful lot of talk, more hype than most young players get when they come to come onto the tour, you know, the CBBC documentary and things like that. So a lot of pressure. And he's obviously, it was going to be tough at first, but he's starting to show how good he is. And yeah, I watched that game with Gary Wilson. He was very impressive. Gary obviously wasn't at his best, but still, no, it was good stuff from Stan. And yeah, very exciting to see him keep progressing. And actually, Xing Zhihao is another one I'll notice there. He's only 18, and he made it to round four. He beat Graham Dott and Petrov. So there's another youngster doing well. And he'd already had a couple of wins earlier in the season against quite good people. I can't remember who now. He's had a good start to life on tour. So for the first time in a while, we seem like we've got a few sort of teenage prospects all picking up some wins, which is very encouraging. And yeah, Perry, I thought, yeah, that was very good because he has had a sticky season so far, to say the least, but really burst back into form in quite spectacular style. And yeah, I watched that McGill-McGuigan game. McGill with his new black cue and the glove. Been out of form, and he said he's not fully used to this cue yet, but he said he was playing so badly anyway, he thought it's worth the risk. And he didn't play well in that McGuigan game. He battled and scrapped like he does, and it did very well to come back and win. Yeah, I don't know if the black cue is the answer or what is going on, but he's not in great form. But yeah, it was interesting actually that when, yeah, because McGuigan got to that frame where McGill needed three snookers, and he gave a little fist bump. And then after the game, Anthony said that he'd said to Robbie afterwards, "So I didn't mind the fist bump, but maybe do it after you've won." And I wrote that in a piece and I tweeted it. And quite a lot of people took it the wrong way, as if it was sort of like almost bullying from McGill, or certainly quite mean. But maybe it's because I've spoken to Anthony a few times, but I didn't take it that way at all. And he's a really nice bloke, and he would have just been giving some friendly advice to Robbie. And Robbie actually responded and tweeted that as well, that it was all meant in good spirits, and McGill's very sound. So, yeah, I was glad that Robbie did that to clear that up, because, yeah, any experience I've had with McGill, he's a real good guy. But not playing that great at the minute. what else was going on there? Murphy, I thought, actually was looking very dangerous then. I saw a bit of that when he played Sean O'Sullivan. I think that's when he had 98-point-something pot success in a 4-0 win. I don't think he missed a ball in like sort of live play. So he was looking very dangerous then. As was Lasowski, you know, again, this seems like a story we've had lots of times when some big names weren't there this week and some other big names fell quite early. It felt like it was opening up by sort of the last 16 stage, and Lasowski was there and looking quite good when he beat Selt 4-1. And, you know, it just seems to have happened a lot. I remember the German last season, that was very much that situation. And Lasowski was in the semis, I think, and everyone was saying, "Is it going to be Jack's week?" And we'll get to that later, but it wasn't. Yeah. But yeah, he was looking good at that stage, though, as he so often does.
Yeah, and I must try and remember that. I messaged you about it, actually, I think, didn't I, on text, about a couple of interviews I saw with Lasowski that I must, when it comes to the semis, bring that up. Into the last 16, then, these are the results from that stage. You mentioned Xing Zhihao. Well, his run ended at that stage, beaten 4-1 by Ricky Walden. Chris Wakelin beat Sean Murphy. And as you say, the way Murphy was playing, that was a good win, 4-2. And then, well, poor Sean then got a bit of an earful from a very cheeky Ronnie O'Sullivan, Phil. I'm sure you've probably seen the clip. I mean, I've got more views for that than most of the movies on Film 4. I mean, it's that absolute... Just talk about a ratings buster, but a very cheeky Ronnie saying you want to try and get some results before you start bringing three cues in. I mean, I think they will have these little, you know, cheeky little jibes at each other a little bit, won't they? I think, but that was a bit naughty from Ronnie, but certainly he loved it. You knew he was being cheeky by his face. Because the crowd all loved it as well. And I thought he knew what he was saying. Jimmy trying to keep sort of half a serious face next year was quite good as well, I thought.
I mean, that's one of the good reasons to have Ronnie on there, because he will say some unpredictable things. But I've got a big respect for Murphy for doing that kind of thing. He thinks about the game a lot. He's an interesting development. And he knows full well people will take the piss like that, because people, because it's just something different. But he's happy to do it anyway, and fair play for that, for standing out for the crowd. Obviously, it didn't work in that game, but, you know, as I said, he was playing great in the games before. He's had some good results. So I thought it was a bit harsh from the Rocket, for sure, talking about him being bashed up all the time. It's certainly not the case. But, yeah, I mean, that whole Q thing is interesting. I have no idea if it's going to work or not. Obviously, it's a pretty unique approach. But I was just watching the darts tonight, and Peter Wright just won the European Championship. He's famous for changing his darts. He changed his darts in the middle of that final and won it just now. He changes it all the time, and a lot of people seem to say he's mad, but he's won two world titles. So, you know, it might prove to be a masterstroke for Murphy, but and everyone will be doing it in a couple of years. We'll see. But, yeah, fair play for him for giving it a go, though, I think.
Yeah, but obviously a lot of people did. Yeah, Roddy's got an awful lot of fans out there, and a lot of people saw the humour. But to be fair, you know, I had a couple of people write back under that tweet and say, well, to be fair, at least Sean can be bothered to enter the tournaments, which I thought was a fair riposte in many ways. Well, anyway, 1-6-4 for Stan Moody, 2 was another result from that stage, as was Barry Hawkins, 4, Robbie Williams, 0. Jack Lazowski beat Aaron Hill 4-1. It was David Gilbert 4, Rory McLeod 0. And then really, really good match. Stephen Maguire 4, Joe Perry 3. Breaks of 89, 51 and 64 from Maguire in that one. And then an even better match. Now, I was thinking quite a lot about this afterwards. I am going to draw quite a line in terms of being... I'm going to be quite dogmatic on this one and say I don't think you can have a classic best of seven. I think they're just too short to say they're classic matches. But this was, whatever the word is, for slightly less than classic, Phil. The Trumper knop on Sandcam. I was busy sub-editing on the Times sports desk around deadline time, lots of football, other live sport going on. So I had sort of, I think, corner of my eye on it. But I said, you know, on social media, I don't have to have a full eye on stuff when I know there's some cracking snooker being played. It was brilliant. There's one particular frame. I think it was when it was 3-2 to Nopon. So it would have been the sixth. The safety exchange between them. I mean, try and get a video of it up if you want to see good safety. It was an absolute masterclass for about 15, 20 minutes. Just brilliant stuff. And then, well, one of those, the first of a few comebacks from Trump. He was 3-2 down, won it 4-3. But that was just, I mean, I want to say, I'm personally not going to... You do what you want, Phil. Anyone else can. I am not going to call them classics. But I'm going to say, for a best of seven, that was bloody good.
Yeah, it was great. It was late night stuff as well, wasn't it? I can't remember what time that finished, but it was late on. Yeah, brilliant stuff. Nopon's one of those players that couldn't give anyone a scare, really. It's amazing. He hasn't really... I mean, he's doing well, but I think everyone's expecting him to kick on that extra gear to the very top. Because he's so dangerous. And yeah, that was what we were saying before. You know, Judd steamrolled some people. He's had to really dig in and fight and win some high quality games, because that was a great one. Yeah, and you said that Perry against Maguire was good. I think we didn't mention Perry's previous game, actually. He beat the same 5-4-3. And he won the last three frames to do that. It was 3-1 down. And the last two frames made back-to-back breaks of 122 in each frame. So, yeah, that was very much more evidence of Perry being very much back before his narrow loss to Maguire, which is also nice to see him back playing well. I think I've said on here a load of times, I find him very entertaining. You never know what's going to happen with him, really. But it's good to have him competing at the top of the game. And another great match was his quarterfinal with Judd, actually.
Yeah, definitely. And I heard a couple of times in commentary, actually, on television that line, we've seen him so rarely on our screens in recent times. We have, really. Last year, 18 months, we've barely seen him. But it's really nice to see him playing well again, because I think he's a character we can all get behind. He frustrates me a bit, because I always think, I mean, who am I to say, really? But I think Chris Downer put it quite well when he joined us that time from Sheffield. You know, we all like Stephen, but he frustrates you a bit, because you think he should have won more a little bit, really, if he applied himself a bit more. But again, that's part of the package of who he is. And perhaps if he was a bit more focused, he wouldn't have that kind of charm thing. So it's interesting that, you know, all these players are so different, which is what's so fascinating about it. The quarterfinals. It's
interesting, actually, that I didn't just notice. It actually came out when the draw, but I didn't notice it at the time. But it's the Scottish Open qualifiers this week, which he would have to play in, but he's not entered, because he said he's just not been enjoying having to drive down to, like, Leicester and wherever they play him. Just for qualifiers. So he's missing his home event, just because he's sort of hating the qualifiers so much. But then he's had this run to the quarters here, so I don't know if he'd be regretting that now, because, you know, he'd be a threat. If he's playing well, he'd be a threat in his home event. So that's a bit of a shame. But, I mean, that shows sort of where his mindset is not great still, even though he's sort of improving.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, that does seem a shame. Into the quarterfinals then, and you mentioned that Judd match then. Judd, Trump 5, Stephen Maguire 4, Trump 4, 3 down in that one. But again, showing the tenacity to come from behind. Where's he found that energy from? That's what we were saying. Never mind the snooker, just in, you know, in a physical sense, so tired from his exertions day after day, but managing to get the job done. And then, well, I got a couple of messages actually from friends that would like their snooker traditionally and historically, but wouldn't watch an awful lot of it. One particularly great old mate of mine, Matt Ogborn, who messaged that he was staying with his in-laws, actually, and caught the Lazowski Walden. And he was saying how impressed he was by Jack. And, you know, asking me a bit about him. Jack won that game 5-1, breaks of 1-2-8, 81 and 73 from him. But I thought that's really typical in a way. And the way I answered it was that I said to my friend Matt, who I think would like those expressive free spirit types in sport. I said, oh, you'll definitely be a fan. He's got all the flair. Such an exciting guy to watch. Real kind of maverick. But he lacks that steely edge. And, you know, he still hasn't won the tournament, frankly. I think he's 32 now. And it was almost the ideal script in a way for what I was saying. The next day, he barely showed up. And that's the kind of shame about it with Jack. But we'll come to the semis in a mo. But Lazowski was excellent against Walden. And exciting match that went all the way. Barry Hawkins, David Gilbert. I saw a bit of that, actually. And Gilbert came back from 4-2 to 4-4. And I remember thinking, he's really playing well, Gilbert, again. He's lovely to watch him. But Barry kept his nerve, a couple of good breaks in that decider, one in the 50s, I think, to win it 5-4. And then Chris Wakelin beating Juan Sidrun at 5-2 to get himself into the last four. Well, the semis then, a couple of really contrasting matches. I mean, Chris Wakelin 6, Jack Lazowski 1 was a real surprise. I mean, Jack never got going at all. I thought he might when he won the second frame, lost the first, won the second. But from there, it was just one-way traffic, and he just didn't turn up. And it was, but Wakelin played well, did well, got himself into the final, really big for him. And then Trump and Hawkins, oh my goodness. And of course, they had that final recently where Barry won. And they were teasing me a bit in the office because 4-1, I was saying, oh, that looks like the run's over now. And they say, oh, Mystic Metcalf, because of course, about an hour and a half later, Trump had come right back and he won it. He won 5 in a row. You can't keep a good man down. He won 6-4. But an interesting set of quarters and semis there. But the Lazowski thing, now I remember the interview. They run these very good interviews on Eurosport. I'm not convinced all of them are from this week, but they're certainly recent. I think our friend Michael McMullen was doing stuff. I think he was there, wasn't he? But some of the stuff with Rachel, I thought, might have been recorded a bit earlier. But anyway, Lazowski was saying lots of great stuff, but a couple of things, I was like, that's interesting. He was saying, oh, you know, my issue is I just, you know, I lack any ruthlessness and I'm reckless. I'm really reckless. I think, I don't know, I find it, I don't want to pick on Lazowski here. I think he's glorious. I think he's great. And I don't think we over-talk about him because he reaches – people say you guys talk about him too much. I don't agree with that. He reaches latter stages of a lot of tournaments. He's regularly very high in the rankings. I don't think we ever talk about him. And I don't want to get on his case by too much. But I do want to say, I wonder why Peter Ebdon isn't cutting that sort of language out. I don't want to see Lazowski in an interview saying how reckless he is. I don't think he should be. I mean, I know that's a part of his makeup. He is a bit reckless. But – you know, again, these guys are all different, but surely you don't want to hear him say that. You want to hear him say, well, I've got that sort of... And sometimes he will say more the quotes-unquotes right thing, like, my temperament isn't great, but I'm really learning to control it. When I heard him say how reckless he was, I thought, oh, come on, Jack. That's the last thing I want to hear. I want to hear that you're knuckling down, you've got Ebdon in your corner, you've got that game face on. But unfortunately, no, that's not what we saw. But what a contrast between the quarter and the semi-final. Classic Lazowski.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that win against Walden was really, really good. That's when he was looking like it really could be his weekend. If he'd carried on playing like that, it may well have been, but he didn't. I didn't watch all of that game in the semi, but I don't think it was just by... I don't know what happened to him, really. I don't think it was just by him sort of being over the top in terms of shot selection and stuff, but he just played poorly. I mean, Wakelin was good, obviously, but he didn't have to be... at his absolute best to beat him quite comfortably. So it was very strange. And yeah, Jack does say those things, you know, he often says, oh, he's just a slow learner. But I don't know, how, sometimes it does seem glacial, sort of the speed of his learning with some stuff. But yeah, it's the semi-finals. I mean, you know, that's, it's a good run, isn't it, by almost anyone's standards, and including Jack's. It's got to be, really.
Yeah,
you know, you can't turn down a semi-final, but you again, you've got to go away frustrated. But, you know, keep plugging away. I suppose the frustrating thing is, you know, those six ranking finals you got to have all been against really, really good players, like top elite players. And that sort of view sometimes is like, oh, that, you know, sometimes he'll get to a final, it won't be against one of those guys, and that's when he'll get over the line. But he has lost in sort of quarters and semis quite a few times against guys who he was favourite to beat as well. So it is concerning. You know, we're all very confident that he will win something at some point, but nothing's a foregone conclusion. And he's going to have to, yeah, sort out. It's consistency, isn't it? I mean, that's what everyone is looking for, even the very, very best players, the absolute best in the world ever, want to improve their consistency. But that was such an example of Jack's lack of it there, going from as good as he can play, really, to almost as bad as he can play within a day. It was quite mad, but yeah, good for Wakelin.
Yeah, exactly. It really was good for Wakelin. He got himself into the final, and well, we talked about it earlier on, of course. Judd Trump winning 9-3. It was comfortable in the end for Judd. He crucially going 6-2 up. That you felt he broke the back of it then, really. And Wakelin with the needed something really quite substantial and mighty to come back from that. But Trump got the job done. He won it. He is the champion. We say congratulations once again to the brilliant Trump, who's just having one of the great months, the great autumns of his career and anyone's career. It really is great stuff. Phil, as ever, we're trying to keep to time, but we love talking snooker, don't we? So I'm conscious it's going on a bit, but we have to say, good tournament all round, decent crowds, very well staged. Scoring not great, down on the site, certainly early on. Got better, I felt, in fairness, in terms of online. Every time I looked, In the later days, I felt it was pretty good. But yeah, certainly at times it wasn't. And scoreboards in the arena kept sort of packing up, didn't they? And all sort of whirring around here and there. I think Barry Hawkins, who's not a man to be too outspoken, called it pathetic at one time. So, you know, it gets to everyone, of course, but it wasn't quite good enough. And one more thing I've written down here, which is not a highbrow point for me. Possibly snooker's most ludicrous sneeze ever tonight in the final. Did you catch that sneeze? That was ludicrous. I mean,
I didn't notice it. I had the sound off for some of it, but
wow! I mean, that whoever it is has to go and buy some industrial strength Lemsip in boots on Monday morning. That was quite something. Neil Fold, in that lovely way, has said, "Well, even the most ridiculous loud sneezing can't put Judd off." But it was good stuff. But yeah, scoring, I'm afraid, to give my own score at times, nil point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've got to agree with that. I've got to agree with the Hawk. I think pathetic is a word I've used for it. I mean, it's about as basic as you can come, really. You know, getting the scores out there. Not that I'm saying I know how to come up with an algorithm to do live scores or anything, but to be honest, it's a three table tournament. You know, if you just got some people to input them manually into something, that you wouldn't think it'd be that hard. And it's been going on for so long. Yeah, there's nothing good to say about it, really. It was working for some of it, but you know, that's not good enough, is it? I'm not sure. The UK was always the target, wasn't it? But I think Dave Henderson said it might have been even longer than that we're waiting. But yeah, there's one thing when we're sort of waiting at home, that's bad enough. But when the players have to sit there and go and sit in their chairs while they fix it in the arena, it just looks terrible, doesn't it? So yeah, we continue to wait for hopefully that to sort itself out. But I thought the tournament was great, though. It always is, even without the big names that we're missing. you know, I don't know if that affected any crowd numbers. Ronnie obviously pulled out so late. I think it would have ticket sales would have been all right anyway. But yeah, we said it before, there's so many good players that we want to watch. It's not a problem. Obviously, it's nicer if all the big players are there, but yeah, we can. It's not the end of the world when they're not. So yeah, it's a highlight of the calendar and continues to be.
Very much so. And that was another successful staging of the Northern Ireland Open. Congratulations to everybody that put it on and all the players that took part, the officials. And we just thoroughly enjoyed watching on, didn't we? And we should say you are most welcome here to this newest episode of Talking Snooker with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Phil, the road show goes on. We're back to China again with a few days grace in between. But it's the international championship at the Tianjin People's Stadium in Tianjin, China, the seventh largest city in that enormous country, around 100 miles to the south of Beijing. Well, we were talking before we came on air, and I must admit you pointed out the job was defending champion. I'd forgotten that until I looked it up. But yeah, Judd Trump is on the most incredible roll. Well, he's a defending champion in this, and he won it when it was first held in 2012. So it's a tournament he likes. And I notice he's got Gong Zhenzi or Wang Xingzhong first up. They'll play early on in the tournament, and Judd will play the winner of that. And I'll look at some other highlights. And world champion Luca Pacella has got Ahmed Ali El Sayed early on. David Gilbert, Jordan Brown, one match that I thought took the eye. Looking forward to that one. A couple of guys, Ronnie O'Sullivan, Ken Doherty. I think they might seem to be quite new on the scene, but we'll that's Ronnie. They've actually played recently. Ronnie beat Ken 5-1 at the Wuhan Open a few weeks ago. Mark Williams, Zhang Ander, one that caught my eye. In fact, Williams had a win this season in that same matchup, winning 5-0 in the European Masters. You probably think it'll be closer than that this time, but we'll see. And a repeat of the Crucible match just gone. John Higgins, David Grace. So that's a few that I scribbled down, but there's plenty of matches to come. And yeah, we're zigzagging, aren't we, Phil, between the kind of UK and China this autumn. But we're going back there for another big tournament. And I suppose we have to say, can Judd make it four in a row? I can't believe I'm even asking the question, but I've got to. I've got to ask it.
Yeah, and I don't see why not. You know, he's got a week off now before that, so not quite as manic as some of the schedule. As you say, the defending champion's won it twice before. This is in a different city, different stadium from where it's been before, so it's not quite home comforts. But, you know, how he was speaking after he won in Wuhan the other week, how much he loves playing in China, talking about moving there. He's not moving to China, but he was just making the point that he very much enjoys playing over there. Big tournament, 175 grand for the winner. Ooh. So, yeah, I don't see why not. He's going to be the favourite, given his form. he starts off against one of those two wildcard players who play each other first. And one of them, Wang Jingzhong, is only 12 years old. So that would be remarkable if he plays him. And what if he lost his 20-match winning streak to a 12-year-old? That would be quite a story. But yeah, no reason to doubt Judd, other than it's so rare for people to do it. So I suppose historically that's against him, but there's nothing to say that he won't win again.
No, I mean, I'm looking through the roll call of winners, and it's terrific, actually, over the years, the decade or so it's been on. Obviously, now we haven't had it for a few years since the pandemic, but we'll look forward to that. It's got a sort of a tournament with a name that I felt was really growing before the pandemic. So it'd be nice if that could build it up again, the old international championship coming up then. And Phil, well, we wanted to do about an hour. So I'll tell you what, we have got some correspondence. What I think we could do is take the couple that's related to the Macau situation, if that's okay. So maybe we'll do Brian Campbell after Ruud. And maybe if I leave Brian for you, I'll take Ruud. It says, "Hi, Nick and Phil. Greetings from Tilburg in the Netherlands. First, I would like to say a word of gratitude for your work on the podcast." Never leave compliments out, Phil. We know that. "I'm sure all listeners will agree we don't mind if you go a bit over time, especially when you have a great guest like David Burney." We must mention David later. "Regarding the Macau 5 controversy, at first when I heard about this, I thought it was quite a bad look for WST. I think WST didn't do themselves any favours by the way they approached this issue. The way they went after the players only gave more attention to the fact that they chose to play in the exhibition events instead of the Northern Ireland Open. But after listening to Sean Murphy, who I think was very eloquent in showing both sides of the argument, I think WST was fully within their right to sanction the players over this. If this is the contract the players have with WST, of course they should abide by it, as WST have their obligations. All in all, I think this is an issue that could have been handled much better. These exhibitions were announced a couple of months ago. Why wait so long to deal with this issue? This could have been dealt with in a much earlier phase, I think, and without all the fuss that has now been created." From Ruud. Well, thank you very much indeed. Yeah, of course, they did threaten potential sanctions. We don't know what they were, but there were certainly threats to report these players to the WPBSA Disciplinary Committee. It didn't come to that. As we know, the event was rearranged for Christmas. I like the way that Ruud's saying, you know, minds changed on this field. You know, seeing both sides, I think we kind of said that on here. That's what most people are doing. And hopefully that's what I did with my new Sporting Life column. And thank you for your kind words about that, by the way. You know, WST, I think, as we said, we both agree, will think, and I think with some justification, they had to act, because if they didn't, players might do this again in November, December, January, and it will go on. And they felt they had to sort of nip it in the bud now. And but yeah, good views, I think, generally from Ruud. And I presume that he's referring to Sean Murphy on his own podcast, of course, who did speak very eloquently on the matter. And I think singing with the same hymn sheet, but you can see it from the players' side. You know, some people definitely think they were hard done by that I've spoken to. There's obviously this business in the contract that it was detrimental. A lot of people say to me, it's quite hard to argue that, but I mean, I would say, you know, it's pretty straight up that to some extent you could see it was detrimental to Northern Ireland, because the talk for ages was which players aren't going to be there. And that feels like it's detrimental to the event. But anyway, it's a nuanced one, a difficult one. But I think Ruud's expressed this pretty well.
Yeah, I think, like I said before on it, that I think a lawyer would have had a good go at defending the players there, because they had all those clauses that were extremely specific about what exhibitions you can't play in. And Macau certainly wasn't covered by those clauses. It was just covered by this sort of catch-all one. So, I mean, I'm not a contract lawyer, but I reckon that if I was, and I was a good one, that you could argue pretty well that because it's not covered in those very specific ones, then you'd be all right. But I don't know. I think, yeah, I mean, my natural view is I think the players should be able to do what they want. So I think they were sort of hard done by in this situation, but I think this situation just could have so easily been avoided by the people putting this event on, just doing it when a ranking event wasn't being played. You know, there's plenty of opportunities, and hopefully that's just what will happen in the future. Because like you said, I can completely understand World Snooker's point on it. And, you know, like during the qualifiers last week, they had the event in Shanghai. So hopefully, you know, everyone will be pretty much happy with what situations go forward, and this situation can just be avoided, because it seemed quite unnecessary, really. But yeah, I would almost always tend to fall on the side of the players and these kind of things. And I sort of do, but I definitely do see Will Snooker's point of view as well. So yeah, I think it's a nuanced one, as you say. And Brian Campbell is here with, on the same, topic. Dear Nick and Phil, there's been a lot of comment regarding the five top players not entering the Northern Ireland Open and originally opting to play in an exhibition in China instead. I feel I'm in the minority in agreeing with WST's stance in clamping down on this. It would have been a slippery slope which may have led to long-term damage to the game. Firstly, why would sponsors want to come on board in the future if after pumping their money in as many as five of the very best players decide not to play? In addition, Eurosport have done an amazing job in broadcasting snooker, but again, would they think again regarding their relationship with snooker if top stars decided declined to play? If top players devalue the game, they can't complain if sponsors and TV lose a bit of interest. When there was plenty of space in the calendar in August, September, I can't get my head around organising an exhibition tournament at the same time as a ranking event. These players have earned incredible amounts of money. It's not as if the money was going to be life-changing. Had it been then, I would have understood their stance a whole lot more. Finally, to end on a positive note, the sterling work you both do in producing this podcast weekly really spoils us, the listeners. Don't ever get burnt out, though. You are such busy guys that if you had to take a break now and again to recharge the batteries, then your fans would totally understand. Short-term loss for long-term game is no bad thing. As ever, keep up the great work. Thanks for your fantastic listening company. Kind regards, Brian. Well, that was very kind of you, Brian. Thanks very much for that compliment at the end. Very, pretty much appreciated. And yeah, I think that's what I was saying there, really. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, there's a whole summer, there's plenty of bits of the calendar that qualifiers, you know, it's pretty much just top 16 guys that have wanted to go and play in these exhibitions. So I think compromise can surely be found. And yeah, it's just sort of a vicious cycle with stuff like that. If players don't want to, players want to go and play in exhibitions in far-flung fancy hotels instead of playing in ranked tournaments, and then they come and play in ranked tournaments, and then they'll complain about venues or lack of sponsors or lack of prize money, and it's like, well, you haven't played in it, so you know that's not going to improve those things. So yeah, I get what Brian's saying there, but yeah, as I say, hopefully it's not a situation that will need to arise again.
Yeah, no, indeed. Can't really add much more to that. So thank you, Brian. You certainly put the case, you know, for the WST. And I really enjoy reading generally, you know, on social media, people very thoughtful about this issue. I posted something on Reddit, actually, as well. Talk about Down With The Youngsters, Phil, on the snooker page there, and plugging a bit of my work, I should add. But that people were very sort of intelligently writing back again. And again, it's sort of expressing both sides. There's clearly, you know, some good debate to have over this, but obviously an issue that dominated, you know, snooker in recent weeks. But Phil, we definitely got back to matters on the table more, didn't we, with what happened in Northern Ireland, international championship to come, and some more qualifying action as well in the coming days. We've done about an hour, I think. We should maybe have any other business. I'm sure you've probably got a few more things you want to say, but I think one thing I definitely want us to mention is some words about our friend and colleague Hector Nuns, who is taking a back seat, certainly more of a back seat, after covering snooker extensively for the last 20 years. Well, Hector's been a huge character in snooker journalism, absolutely no question about that. He's made a massively significant contribution to the way the sport's been covered in newspapers over the last two decades, no doubt about it. And like everyone else in that press room, I've certainly long admired his tireless efforts. We'll miss him a lot, Phil. Hopefully we'll still see him. Hopefully he'll still pop into tournaments. We're, you know, that's obviously up to Hector, but he's a big part of that press room over the years. He really has been. And on behalf of all snooker people, I think we just say thank you, because, you know, he's done an awful lot of selling of this game of your love, Phil.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely enormous contribution for, yeah, he's, as he said in his post, two decades. You know, as you say, like a huge part of the press room. I mean, a lot of tournaments he'd have been the only part of the press room, really. Yeah. You know, the miles he's put in covering this game and the effort and dedication. You know, it's not an exaggeration to say that, like, there would have been an absolutely enormous amount of fewer articles than Snooker. I'm not worded that very well. If it wasn't for Hector, yeah, he's kept it going in newspapers. Not entirely single-handedly, but he's done a huge amount of it. And yeah, and I don't know who's going to replace that coverage. Hopefully someone, because that would be a big loss to the game. So yeah, hopefully he's not done entirely. I think he said he's stepping away. I'm sure he'll still be involved in some way. But yeah, big thanks to him from the snooker world, really. I think everyone should thank him for that. And hopefully, yeah, we'll see him again at a tournament soon.
Yeah, as you say, not always just a big part of the press room. At times, he was the press room. Yeah. I remember seeing some footage. I think it was that lovely press room at Clandidno there, looking out to the sea. And I remember a bit of footage a couple of times of, I think it might have been WSC filming the tournament in the press room. Oh, it's just Hector. Let's have a quick whiz round. Oh, no, it's just still Hector, you know, and but that's brilliant. But he certainly covered the events, you know, in hugely thorough fashion throughout the season. He's done, you know, Crucible obviously is massive, you know. And as I said, when Hector came on here, you know, if you've read a story, an article about snooker in the last two decades in a British newspaper, there's a very, very high chance it was written by Hector Nuns. And just an example of his wisdom, if you'd like that, do listen to the episode. He joined us here on a couple of years ago, didn't he? And he had so much to say about the industry, the media world as a whole, how the sports covers snooker over the years. And he's been in such a almost unique position to say that, really, because no one's covered the newspaper side of this game more than him in the UK, frankly. So that's our, you know, part of our back catalogue episode with Hector Nuns. We wish Hector well. We hope to see him soon. As I say, he's made a really, really big contribution, which we must thank him for. We must also thank David Burney, who was mentioned earlier by one of our correspondents, Phil, who joined us on the podcast. What a brilliant guest he was, the commentator. I've had a message from David in recent days. He's in Rio, the rascal. Bloody hell. No Brentwood or you know, being asked for if he wants a towel in the Barnsley Metrodome for David. Commentating on the Pan Am Seniors and Open Championships. So, yeah. Sunning himself in one of the world's great cities. But he was great value, wasn't he, David? We had a lot of compliments, people saying, you know, just it was just nice to have a North American voice on here, actually. Mm. And one that spoke so sort of gracefully about the game. He was just top value.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. It almost feels like sort of not a great compliment because it's just your voice and you can't necessarily do much about it. But he just got an amazing voice, hasn't he? I think he said that himself on there. That's why he got commentary gigs in a way. But he's yeah, lovely. And a lovely bloke. And he said he'd be in Sheffield this season, didn't he? So, and he's super friendly, as he befits the Canadian cliche. So if anyone is up at the Crucible this season, then make an effort to meet David. He's a great guy. And yeah, I really enjoyed Left Side that. And I think that there's a tour card on offer for that tournament in Rio. I've been following WPBSA tweets. There's a couple of Brazilian guys in the final, which may be tonight. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Very interesting. Yeah, indeed. And he actually, this is going to be hopeless on an audio service, but he sent me a very nice photo. I think I'll share with you of the setup there. Looked really nice. So, yeah, wish David well. Thanks again. Hopefully we'll come on here again one day. And, yeah, David's a, you know, pretty regular commentator. Sometimes the more niche parts of the snooker world, I think it's fair to say. But, you know, he's available widely on the internet and he does massively long days. And I know all commentators in this sport do, but he literally, some of them morning, noon and night, always got something fresh to say. So, that you know, he's really nice, a nice voice to listen to. And we really appreciate him joining us. Well, Phil, please speak on, plug away. I'm not sure what else you've got to say, but we're going to depart soon. But your keyboard's been on fire again in recent days. What's new?
well, no, not a great deal. I just looked that up. It is in, yeah, the final is between two Brazilian chaps, Fabinho and Jonas Luz. Luth, maybe, I don't know. I assume it's not ex-Liverpool player Fabinho, but I'd be very impressed if it was. Yeah, any of the business? Well, the Scottish Open qualifiers start tomorrow. I was just having a very quick scan through there. A couple of interesting games at caught my eye. An Irish derby between Ken Doherty and Aaron Hill. That's quite a nice one. A Leicester derby between Tom Ford and Louis Heathcote. Jing Xiao, we mentioned earlier, will get taken to school by Fergal O'Brien. Will he pass the test or not? For Fife against Wales, that's quite a nice one. But yeah, usual qualifying fare this week coming, so plenty to look forward to there. It'll be on Discovery Plus. And because we recorded quite early last week, there's a bit of a gap. I don't think we mentioned Q-Tour 3 last weekend in Germany. Heilbronn, Germany, was won by a German player, Umut Dickmer, who I've seen his, he's been a force in amateur games, in amateur tournaments over the last few years. He's played in Q School a few times and got some good wins. He's only 23 years old, and a great result for him there. Beat some good players in the semi-final. He beat Peter Lines in the semis, takes some doing. Then he beat Amin Hussein 5-1 in the final. So very impressive. And it would be great. We said it a few times, you know, great fan base in Germany. It'd be lovely if they got another player on tour who could be a bit of a threat. So yeah, good stuff for him.
Very much so. Yeah, indeed. Thank you for mentioning that. And yeah, I've been looking through these qualifiers myself as well. David Gilbert, Jack Jones might be worth a watch, Phil.
Yeah, very good, yeah.
And as Mike Stewart Bingham against Michael White, there could be some fine, you know, good snooker playing in that match. So yeah, lots of matches to look forward to. And then, of course, we've got the International Championship underway. That'll be starting next Monday. So we have some listeners in the Far East, so it'll be on regular snooker timings for you, if you like, afternoon and evening. But for a lot of us here in Europe, and specifically us two in the UK, I mean, lots of early mornings, of course, some through the night viewing, you know, if you're a night owl, but otherwise it's early morning, it's lunchtime when it's evening there in China. So again, we're getting that kind of nice perspective back, aren't we, Phil? I mean, had so many UK-dominated episodes, tournaments for so long. It's nice to have something a bit different. We're not sure what we're doing next time, are we? We could be, let's be honest, the world's our oyster. Might get a voice on, we're not sure. We only took a bit of that correspondence in. We got more correspondence generally on the game, not quite specifically on the Macau fight, but on other matters. And of course, we've got those bloody shots as well, Phil, which we'll do one day. So we got those on the back burner. Loads going on in snooker. So we may have a voice next time. We'll be either way in the coming days. And if it's an appropriate voice and a good and fun voice, we'll bring that to you next time. Just looking at the calendar though, Phil, heading into November now, just mouth-watering stuff, isn't it? International coming, as we know. Then the Champion of Champions, what a tournament that is, in Bolton. And we've got to say it, not too many weeks away now, the UK Championship in York. All the qualifying will be first, of course, and then November 25th. Remember the 25th, Phil, with the UK Championship in that fine city. I don't think I'm going to be at the tournament myself this year, so I'll miss it. I have to watch from afar, but that's all coming up. So it's a cracking time, isn't it, now? And we never know. One day we might have a tournament that Judd Trump doesn't win. Who knows?
Maybe, yeah. And there's going to be probably some more complaints about the scheduling after this week, I reckon, because the international official on the 12th in Tianjin, the champion starts on the 13th in Bolton. Oh, yeah. So that's a fair old whack. And then actually there's crossover, I assume, very unlikely. Well, actually, not that unlikely. It could happen. Champion of Champions finishes on the 19th and the UK Championship qualifiers start on the 18th. Actually, no, it's extremely unlikely because that's the tiered system, so the qualifiers would be the very lowest ranked players. But still, that's just roll straight in. So, but luckily, Bolton is a lot closer to Leicester than it is to Tianjin. But yeah, it's a busy old time. Plenty to look forward to. And the shootout, the Christmassy shootout in Swansea, I'm sure will be a lot of fun this year. So yeah. Busy.
You can't get a train from Bolton to Tianjin, can you, Phil? Not for love nor money. See you next time, I think. It's time to depart. We'll say keep your thoughts coming, talkingsnooker@yahoo.com, or tweet us at talkingsnooker. Thank you for your company. I salute you. I say see you next time. God knows what we're going to do, but we're going to try and make it good.
Yeah, we always try and make it good, even if the evidence doesn't always suggest it. But we do try. Pleasure as always. Speak to you. Thanks to everyone for listening. Speak soon.
Congratulations again to Judd Trump. He is a truly amazing hat-trick hero and star in this sport, winning a third tournament in a row. winning the Northern Ireland Open, being Chris Wakeley in the final. It's great to have one of these Sunday night records again after a final. And we really do appreciate your company. Have a great week. We'll see you next time from Phil and myself. Cheerio.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.